Today in the studio, take a stroll through the evergreen garden of delights from Paul McCartney's 1989 comeback album, Flowers in the Dirt.
It's a little tough having to try and write something better than Hey Jude or something, you know, and I may not do it. I realize that, you know, but I wrote the first one anyway, so I'm not worried, you know. I feel really, you know, very kind of lucky. Yeah, I've been very lucky with my family life and my music life. So, I mean, you know, I'm not really, yeah, you won't hear too many complaints off me. I'm Paul McCartney in the studio for Flowers in the Dirt.
As rock music exploded in so many places and in so many ways in the 1980s, the decade was particularly difficult for many of the giants of the British invasion, you know, the second generation of rock. The Beatles were 20 years gone by then. The Rolling Stones, The Who, Pink Floyd, and Led Zeppelin were on hiatus, broken up, or in some cases not even speaking to each other. But by 1989, on the threshold of the last decade of the 20th century, something was stirring worldwide, the likes of which had last happened 20 years earlier, when Americans landed humans on the moon and Jimi Hendrix played the Star Spangled Banner at sunup at Woodstock. In 1989, Soviet Premier Gorbachev lifted the Iron Curtain. Cracks appeared in the Berlin Wall. A giant rock festival played in Moscow, and the Rolling Stones and Paul McCartney got their respective mojos working with new albums and electrifying world tours. In the case of Paul McCartney, the 1989 album Flowers in the Dirt was heralded by music writers and the music public as a strong return to form after a series of rather uninspired pop studio releases in the previous 13 years between the historic Wings Over America concert tour of 1976. While touring extensively in 1990 to support the Flowers in the Dirt release, I asked Paul McCartney how the ever-expanding universe of popular music had changed in the interim.
Not as much as I would have thought, actually. You know, I expected at some point to grow up. This has not happened. Rather fortunately, if you ask me.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, I don't see an awful lot of point in sort of so-called growing up. You know, it all looks getting serious and getting mad at everyone. I mean, I've still got a lot of what maybe some other people would call childish interests. You know, like my music. I'm still as into it as I was when I was 15 and younger than that. In fact, you know, our kids are sometimes saying to us, look, Dad, I mean, you're supposed to be like the straight ones.
You're making us
look
bad, right?
We're supposed to be, you know. They say, look, you're the hippies, you guys. You know, what is all this? And I say, well, hang loose, chill out, be all right. You know, be cool. In fact, we got a great relationship with them. We're lucky, actually. You know, they're real good kids. And you kind of can understand young people a little better, maybe. You know, if you're lucky to have some good kids and you're a parent. What I love is there's never been any big weird thing on the music front, which I expect there to be.
Travel.
one of the real hard-to-find collectibles, now available in the Super Deluxe Edition re-release of Paul McCartney's Flowers in the Dirt, is the special rocked-up single remix of the delightful song Figure of Eight. Several of these songs and the subsequent world tour reflected a new engagement with several big-picture socio-political and environmental issues. More than 10 years before former U.S. Vice President Al Gore would win an Oscar for the documentary film An Inconvenient Truth, Paul McCartney was taking a stand on raising awareness of the Earth's imperiled environment caused by humans.
The scientists suddenly discovered this hole in the ozone layer. And I'm like everyone else. I saw it on the news, you know, and you go, oh, that doesn't look too clever. And I think it was the first time any of us realized physically what we're doing to the world. I think when you spray crops, you know, the farmers or the government scientists will say, no, there is no risk and do not worry. Yes, a few people have died, but, you know, and as long as it's not you or your family, you're not too worried and you can kind of put it off.
It's always the other guy.
It's always the other guy and it'll always get fixed. Right. Some government will come along. They'll fix
Who
it for
is
us.
They, right?
Well, you know, exactly. And then you suddenly realize, wait a minute, they didn't stop this 50-mile hole in the sky. Now, that sounds a bit dangerous to me. And the idea of suddenly the planet really taking a bit of a plummet and suddenly, you know, some of these things they've been saying for years actually coming to be, I suppose it kind of frightened me. You know, I've got four kids. And anyway, even if it wasn't for the kids, you know, I've got to breathe. So is the man from Exxon. And, you know, they've all got to breathe and they've all got to live here. So we just thought, well, we're coming out on tour. It's going to be great. We're going to play to the people. We're going to be seeing our audiences smiling and having great fun and making music. But it'd be really nice if after the whole thing's over, we can kind of sit back on our farm where we live and say, hey, you know, we really did something else on this tour. We really made everywhere we've gone, we've had this message. And, you know, I've tried to not get it boring. Because, you know, I know it's a bit, these issues, you know, if you're a kid particularly, it's like, oh, my God, you know. It really is bringing it home to other people, too. I mean, I don't think I'm alone in this. I think, you know, everywhere we go, even when we went to Japan, people said, well, look, it's not a popular thing out here, you know, because, like, they still go whaling and everything. And people are saying, save the whales. The Japanese are still out there, you know, it's gunning them down.
That's right.
You know. But I said, well, you know, it's tough. I'm still going to say it, and we'll see what happens. So I think it's got to come for us all, really, you know, and I'm just happy to be saying it. We don't really go on about it too much on the tour. I figure people want it anyway. But I'm just making sure the governments know that we want it.
I need your loving. I needed a friend. I needed something that would be there in the end. All the rough ride to heaven. Wanna get inside? What will I do? Oh, on the rough ride to heaven. I wanna get inside to be with you. Rough ride
on Paul McCartney's Rough Ride, from Flowers in the Dirt Deluxe Edition. Sir Paul chuckles to this day, recalling a truly rough ride he and his bandmates in the Beatles had one night early on to get home from a London performance.
I think that's what became special, was the fact that we were a unit and we played together. And also we knew each other very well through having toured. And, you know, you're touring in the van and the window blows out, a stone hits it on the motorway and the front, and you're in the British winter. And it's really cold and fog and stuff. And we've got 200 miles to go to get from London to Liverpool. And I mean, talk about like we got to know each other. I mean, this one night I'm talking about, it really was like so cold, you would have just died if we hadn't done something. So what we ended up doing was we lay on top of each other. It's a little beetle sandwich. Literally four of us lying on the back of this van. It was the only way we could do it, man, with the body heat. Because we were laughing hysterically as well, which helped. But this, our roadie just had to, you know, pull his hat down over his ears, man, and drive with this windscreen out, you know. So, you know what, all of those times when you get like a tough thing or a hard gig or something to do, or a big Royal Variety performance or something, or America the first time, you know, these things are like nerve-wracking. The fact that we knew each other so well.
Going fast, coming soon. We made love in the afternoon. Found a flat. After that, we got married. Working hard for the dream. Scoring goals for the other team. Times were bad, we were glad. We got married. Like the way you open up your hearts to each other. As well, love was all we ever wanted. It was all we ever had. Further on in the game, waiting up till the children came. Place your bets with no regrets. We got mad. We got married, we'll be right back.
With distinctive guitar from Pink Floyd, lead guitar player David Gilmour, We Got Married is a prime example of the fine facility with a three-minute mini-movie of the mind, the highly autobiographical tune from Paul McCartney. He'll show more about his late beloved bandmate and soulmate Linda coming up next. Paul McCartney's Flowers in the Dirt is now available as a 2-CD or 2-vinyl LP special edition. And for the uber fan who's not just the garden variety, 3-CD and DVD deluxe edition box set with plenty of extras can be yours. I'm Redbeard. You're with Sir Paul McCartney in the studio for the Flowers in the Dirt deluxe edition.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Paul McCartney with Redbeard himself.
Thank you, Sir Paul. It is always an honor. Around the time of McCartney's comeback tour, Nike was running a controversial television ad featuring NBA Hall of Famer Charles Barkley as a contrarian in response to the All-American image of fellow basketball superstar Michael Jordan. Barkley deadpanned menacingly into the camera, "I am not a role model." Paul McCartney was very familiar with the Catch-22 sentiment from his Beatlemania days.
I always used to hate that feeling because people used to say to us in the early Beatle days, you know, do you feel responsible because there's kids out there screaming and staying out late because of you and all this? And I was saying, no, I hate that idea. Why am I responsible for them? I'm just some singer, you know. But of course, you know, as you grow up and then you get kids of your own and you start to realize what those parents were worried about.
Models, right?
Yeah, you know, they're kind of worried about that. And I can see it now with kids of my own. I still wouldn't figure any entertainer was responsible for my kids' well-being. That's me. That's the parents, right. You know, or the kids themselves.
Right.
But I do understand a little bit more now. And so as far as, like, the Friends of the Earth thing's gone, I thought, well, it'd be great to get in touch with them, see how they'd feel about us kind of promoting them on this tour. So they've got lots of new members. They're getting on with it. And there's a lot of reaction, apparently, in the governments and stuff. And I think, you know, in future elections, I think you'll see a lot of people voting for cleaning this place up.
Oh, I hope you're right. And
you know,
I really...
Well, come on, let's face it, man. You get a weekend off. You've worked hard all week. You go up to some canyon or something where there's a lake or something. And they suddenly, there's a thing posted, you can't swim in here. I mean, that's not
because
where we want to go, is
no,
it? You know?
No.
And I don't know anyone who wants to go in that direction. So I think, you know, we've got probably, to my way of thinking, the most beautiful planet in the universe. I mean, I haven't seen anything better yet. You know, the moon's got a lot of yellow dust. Mars has got a lot of red dust. Off the others are like ice or, you know, gases and stuff. You couldn't even stand on them.
I guess we're stuck. And we're taking care of this one.
Look at this. What we've got. We've got trees. You've got grass. You've got lakes. You've got this incredible mountain air or whatever. And so we mustn't goof it up, you know, it's just too precious.
She makes me go so wrong.
Yeah, you kept me awake, you know you did.
I've loved her all so long.
So why don't you come right out and say it's stupid?
She makes me do things I don't wanna do. I don't know. Intentions are quite sincere.
That's not what you said the other night.
And all you can do is sin.
So go ahead, kid yourself, you're right.
She makes me do things I don't want to do.
I've got a better chance than you do. I know.
unmistakably. You Want Her Too is a duet with Elvis Costello, one of four songs co-written with Paul McCartney on Flowers in the Dirt. For three decades, Paul McCartney has never hesitated to volunteer that the her that he would personally, romantically, and professionally want was Linda Eastman McCartney, his bandmate in Wings and his soulmate for life. Calling Linda their entourage's resident animal activist, Paul supported her popular published vegetarian cookbook, which was a bestseller.
You know, it's our tour kind of thing. We're part of the promotion. So it really would go against everything we stand for if we had to buy in meat every day. So what happened was we said, look, anyone who wants to come to our canteen, it just happens to be vegetarian. In fact, we've got a lot of converts on the crew. They said, geez, I didn't know. Because she's really gone to town to make it taste good, you know, and get every little sort of thing we know about. And there's like meat substitutes. And half the people don't even know they're eating, not eating meat, because it's pretty convincing, some of the stuff, particularly you can get from America, some real good stuff. Anyway, the promoter got back to me. He said, like you said, you've got some guys out there, 6'7". I mean, these guys are pumped up, you know. They don't eat it. They just throw it in their heads, you know, and it, you know, just kind of absorb it like a sponge. No, anyway, you know, and I said, well, I know about that. I said, I'll tell you what, though. I said, anyone who wants to eat like that, they're going to have to just pay for it themselves. That's the thing. So if they want to eat for nothing, they eat vegetarian. I said, anyway, now here, hold on a minute. I said, what's the strongest, nearest to man animals in the kingdom? What do you like, a male gorilla, you know? And you see in those programs, you see this guy pumped up with his steroids, those whacking great male gorillas. Well, they eat leaves. They're not carnivores, you know. So I said, well, I'll match any one of these riggers against my male gorilla any day. And you know, you don't have to do that to be pumped up. It's a fallacy. But the thing is, you know, it's just because how we were all raised by our moms and dads. I'm the same. Linda was the same. You know, it's our tradition. And what's interesting is it's changing. Our traditions are changing. You know, half of what we know now didn't exist when we were kids. And so I think it's an interesting idea for the future, personally. You know, it's interesting on a lot of levels. You've got the economic level. You know, it's kind of, you know, you have to have like three fields of grain to actually, you know, feed cattle and stuff. Whereas, you know, if you edit direct, it's kind of cheaper and stuff. And there are a lot of very interesting facts like that from some of the people we meet. But I mean, I don't want to go on about it heavily now, you know, but enough to say that we're veggies and have been for 20 years, raised all our kids on it. I'm very happy, you know.
suppose it, baby, will you please come home? No, it's meant for you. As I clear away another untouched TV dinner from the table,
song from Paul McCartney's Flowers in the Dirt, My Brave Face. Still to come, Paul McCartney electrifies the rock world with his first performances in 13 years, and you'll hear more about why the boy can't help it. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Sir Paul McCartney, digging deep for Flowers in the Dirt.
Welcome back. In the studio, I'm Paul McCartney with Redbeard himself.
It's a real treat, Paul. Thank you so much. The passing of Chuck Berry certainly was pause for reflection upon Berry's and the other rock and roll pioneers' essential importance to understanding the last half century. It's safe to say that without Chuck Berry, Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones, and yes, the Beatles, would probably not exist, at least not as we know them. Paul McCartney would add another American, Buddy Holly, as leaving a lasting legacy.
You know, we were all just kind of school kids, and up until that point, rock and roll hadn't really broken for us. You know, we were just young. It was like, I don't know how old we were, it was like 14, 15 or something, you know. Remember then? And it was cool, and we'd have a lot of fun in the playground just chatting to each other. We had a little thing called a smoker's corner. Right, that the teachers weren't supposed to know about. And you went there to have a little sort of, because, you know, 15, we were really thinking we were quite hoody, you know. And we'd all have a, you know, somebody had managed to produce a cigarette or something, and we'd all have a smoke before going to school. Not to be recommended these days. This is before you knew about cancer and stuff. We just thought it was a dead heavy thing to do, you know. And that was the kind of place where I learned all of that, you know, just started. Somebody would mention Buddy Holly and the Crickets, you know, we kind of go, oh, that sounds good, who's that, you know. And then on the radio you started to hear That'll Be the Day. It was really the first, that was the killer. And I still love that record. It's just got a magic sound on it. That's one of the things about Buddy's stuff. You know, I've got some involvement with the publishing now, so I kind of push his work quite a bit around the world. But it's really mainly just because I'm a big fan. It was a big formative influence, you know. But his stuff, some of it still sounds innovative. If you listen like Peggy Sue, I mean, I've never heard another record that goes on the drums so ever since. And, you know, you just sort of think, God, I mean, that's why it all stood out so much. And the harmonies on That'll Be the Day and Buddy's guitar playing. And that's not even mentioned in his voice and the little sort of, you know, the sort of gimmicks and stuff. So we just fell in love with him, you know. And the other thing that made it really good for some of the guys in the group, particularly when we started to play music, was anyone with glasses was now okay. Because till then, glasses had been death, man. I mean, four eyes, come on, you know, fruitcake. And like these were not people you wanted to be associated with. And so John would walk around banging into lampposts, you know. Oh, sorry, ma'am, you know. Because you had to take these whacking great horn rims off, you know. But then Buddy came into fashion and John wore those things all the time. Then, you know, he could come out of his closet.
Give me your hand, I'd like to shake it. I want to show you I'm your friend. You'll understand if I can make it clear. It's all that matters. That's what a father said to his young son. I don't care if it weighs a ton.
As long as you and I are here, put it there. Long as you and I are here, put it there. If there's a fight, I'd like to fix it. I hate to see things go so wrong. The darkest night and all its mixed emotions is getting lighter. Sing along, put it there, if it weighs a ton. That's what a father said to his young son. I don't care if it weighs a ton. As long as you and I are here, put it there. Long as you and I are here, put it there.
Paul McCartney exposed the roots of some of the flowers in the dirt with the Skiffle Toe Tapper, named after a favorite saying of his father, the unconditional support, which was, "Put it there, son, if it weighs a ton." The string quartet in the arrangement was a fond nod to Beatles producer the late George Martin, but the charming simplicity Paul learned from Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
In England, there's the game cricket, so you see, and we knew about the little chirpy, you know, hoppity goes to town type crickets. We knew about them. So we thought they've been brilliant. They've really got this amazing double meaning name of like the game and the bug. So this is great. So we thought, this is brilliant. We thought, well, we've got to do this. So John and Stuart came up with this name that the rest of us hated. He said, Beatles, but spoke with an A, you know. And we said, well, why, you know? He said, well, you know, because it's a bug and it's got a double meaning, just like the cricket. So we were influenced in many, many ways. And the other big thing was that Buddy wrote his own stuff. Until then, not many people had ever done that. So John and I immediately wanted to write our own stuff, because till then we'd just been playing anything we'd ever heard off the radio. And because you heard it off the radio, there was never any time to get the words. So we had some fairly screwed up lyrics. It's great though, nobody knew. You know, at least we'd heard the song. They hadn't even heard the song. But you know, we used to do Come Go With Me, you know, the Del Vikings, the real early record. And John used to sing, come go with me down to the penitentiary. Hey, you know, like with some old blues song he'd heard somewhere. He took all the sort of, you know, jail prison lyrics off all the other folk songs, because we didn't know the words. He stuck them in that one. So, yeah, we were very influenced by this part of the world and the States in general.
Now, as the most successful singer-songwriter in recorded history, Paul McCartney certainly doesn't need to haul a band and crew of 100 and tons of gear from continent to continent in order to just put food on the table. Why not try gardening with the real flowers in the real dirt?
I need to tour just because when you make music, that's how you start out, with some form of touring, you know, little clubs. You then get bigger and bigger and bigger, like with the Beatles, and then you get to America, you get worldwide recognition, if you're lucky, you know. And we did all of that. So it's really a huge part of my life is touring. You know, it's something that I'm very used to. And lately I've kind of thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just make records and stuff and just hang out at home. That's nice too. You know, I like that too. But a couple of years ago we said, well, you know, it might be really good to kind of get out and tour. And I must say I'm really enjoying it. You know, it's something that I'm used to. I know, you know, I it's just kind of natural to me. And the real great thing, as you say, I don't need to do it to eat. But in a way, kind of spiritually, the feedback you get from the audience is very special. I mean, you make your records for the guy or the girl to put on when they get home. You know, whether it is they've got a vinyl CD or a cassette or in the car or something. And you always make your records with that person in mind, kind of, you know, the fictitious listener that you're trying to please. So when like 50,000 of them show up all at once, it's pretty like overwhelming. It's like, here they all are. And somebody I was talking to said, we were all hugging each other. He said, I was saying, well, you know, I don't ask you to do that, you know, but they just feel like that. So it really is very powerful.
The perks of being the most successful composer and recording artist ever can be easily imagined. But what's the hardest thing about being Paul McCartney?
I don't know. I suppose like the hardest thing is the standards you've set yourself. It's a little bit awkward occasionally. You wish you hadn't ever written a decent song. So the next one you'd come up with would be the one that it would be a good one.
So being in competition.
With yourself. is really a bit sort of tough sometimes. But I'm really not complaining. You won't hear any complaints from me because, I mean, I really enjoy it. It's a little tough having to try and write something better than Hey Jude or something, you know. And I may not do it. I realize that, you know. But I wrote the first one anyway, so I'm not worried, you know. I feel really, you know, very kind of lucky. I've been very lucky with my family life and my music life. So, I mean, you know, I'm not really, you won't hear too many complaints off me.
By the time Paul McCartney embarked on the Flowers in the Dirt massive world tour, it soon became apparent that he had reconciled the Beatle phenomenon in his mind and heart and was clearly not reticent to discuss it at length and in great detail. What few realized was that some of the biggest latter-day Beatles songs had been popularized after the Beatles had stopped touring. So the Flowers in the Dirt tour afforded McCartney a treat which fate had almost denied us and him.
There are a few like that. Hey Jude, for instance, we never played. I only played it once after we recorded it. We recorded it in Trident Studios in Soho, London. And Ringo had just gone to the toilet, which was kind of just through the studio. And I didn't know. I hadn't seen him just go out. He just ducked out. I thought he was back in his drum booth, which was like hidden from us right over the back. So I started, hey, Jude, ding, 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 don't make it, man. And I'm working through this. A long intro without the drums. As I'm halfway through, I suddenly see this figure creeping along behind me. It's Ringo. He's just finished the toilet. He's trying to get to the drum kit. He realizes we're on a take, you know, and he doesn't want to break it up. It looks like it's going good. This is the one. This was the take. So he sits down just in time to go, doo-doom, doom, doo-doom, poof, and he's in, you know. You go, oh, dear me, that man is blessed. You know, anyone else would have fallen over or hit a cymbal or something. So that was the take on that. And then I never sang it after that except to do the video. I think we did a live vocal on the video. I can't remember. It was a nice video to do, and we had a lot of fun. But after that, I never did it. The Beatles weren't touring anymore. There was never really anyone who sort of said to me, go on, give us a Jude, poof. So I never had any call to do it, you know, and I didn't bother. So that's one of the great things for me about this tour, actually. It's like Sgt. Pepper, Hey Jude, Fool on the Hill, Gotta Get You My Life, I think, Abbey Road medley. There's quite a few of them that we never got a chance to do with the Beatles. So they're coming up now like real fresh numbers. Even though they're probably older than the rest of the stuff, they feel fresher to me than some of the stuff I've been playing for the last few years, you know.
And don't think that Paul McCartney is unaware that there are precious few second acts in rock and roll, and third acts are unheard of.
And then I've been amazingly lucky since, you know. I've had this kind of thing with Wings, which, like, did great. And then I've had this kind of third, you know, life, really, with the new band. Which is, it's beautiful, you know, and we're having a ball. We're just enjoying it. I mean, there were a lot of things, you know, where people kind of saying, oh, you're following the Beatles, or you've got to be as good as Wings and stuff. But we just kind of bit the bullet, as they said, and just said, let's just get a band. Let's just really try and be good. Let's get a nice selection of songs. Let's just commit to it and go and do it. And it's worked out.
Bonus track, Party Party, is a sequel to Paul McCartney's birthday rave-up from the Beatles' White Album. It's found on McCartney's deluxe edition, Flowers in the Dirt, unreleased demos, unseen archival video, a 112-page hardcover book, and the ultra-rare Put It There video documentary is in stores and online. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Sir Paul McCartney. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.